5440, it's a rather enigmatic name for a band. What exactly does it come from?
Well, it comes from North American history. The 11th president of the United States was a fellow named James Polk, and his campaign slogan was 5440 or fight. And what that refers to is a line of latitude. That's where he wanted to establish the border between the United States and British North America. You know, in the Oregon territories, which was like Oregon, Washington, British Columbia. So we thought that was kind of a funny little episode of history, and so we sort of just grabbed the name. It worked for Polk. Hopefully it'll work for us.
Yeah, it's sort of a bit of a Canadian stance there, too, I suppose.
Yeah, well, in a sense, there's definitely, you know, it's definitely there, yeah.
Okay. I was listening to your first album of the day, Set the Fire.
Right.
And this new album seems to have a much fuller sound on it. Was this a conscious objective, or did it just come about?
Well, there's a lot of things about Set the Fire that of course, we really liked at the time. But looking back on it, when we went to make this record, we felt that things could afford to be a little bit more lively, and try to be a little bit more direct. And that was more or less where we're at with this one. And when it came down to it, instead of the average independent production where you try to keep some of your funds left over after the thing's recorded and mixed to press copies and that kind of stuff, we just blew the whole wad on trying to, which is not very much, because essentially this is an independent record as well.
Exactly.
In recording it, mixing it, trying to make it as full as we possibly could. I mean, in the sense that we went for, you know, best performances and really tried to work out some subtleties in the arrangement and the dynamics of each song. So it's a little bit a fuller production. And then we more or less shop that as an album. And when we finally signed with Warner Brothers, they just insisted that we remix it, and more or less it's the same as it was when we finished it on our own, other than a remix.
Yeah. How did the move from Mo to Moo to Warner's come about, anyway?
How did it come about?
Yeah.
Very gradually. I go into some detail. It's a long, long story.
Okay.
When we finished Set the Fire in like late 1983. And it was released in January of 84.
Mm-hmm.
And we toured with that fairly extensively, in the sense that we went up and down the West Coast a couple times to promote that record and through Western Canada. And one of the first tours we did was about May of 84, and that was when we first started to generate major label interest, specifically with companies like CBS. Who were pretty high in the band. But we weren't too interested in that kind of stuff at the time, because we had our own record and we just wanted to see it do as well as it could and that kind of thing. And I guess it would be like 1985 when we went down there again in October, this time with our tape in hand. You know, we'd recorded this latest album from March till about August of 1985, went down to California in October of 85, and we had lots of major label interest.
So this album out now is already about a year old then?
It is. You bet it is. Yeah. I mean, we started recording it in March of 85, and we essentially had it done the way we wanted it, or the way we could afford to do it, by August or September of 85. So about a year ago, yeah. And so when we went down to California, the idea was to get a deal of some sort, either with an independent label or a major label, someone who would press and distribute what we've already created, you see. And anyways, as it turns out, just the Warner Brothers is the one that pursued us you know, to the end of that we signed with them, and the record came out in June mm-hmm. of this year.
Yeah, gave you the most interesting deal, I guess.
What's that?
Gave you the most interesting deal of the bunch.
Well, yeah, they did. I mean, they were the ones that showed that they were committed to the band and were going to allow us to progress at our own pace and we like that and respect that. So that's the way it came about.
Okay, getting back to the music a bit, which I'm sure you're more interested in anyway.
Yes, you bet I am.
The lyrical content of the songs is I found it rather doom and gloomy. Is there a reason for this, or?
On this record?
Yeah, not so. Not
or
quite
Set
as
the
much.
Fire.
Yeah, more so on Set the Fire, but it was still there on the new one.
Yeah, well, Neil writes all of the lyrics.
Yes.
And Neil's a very interesting fellow. It's just a side of Neil's personality and extends itself to the band and to the band's songs. You know, I mean, it's not a doom and gloom record by I think any stretch of the imagination. It's not like it's not that way. There are songs which might, you know, outwardly seem initially kind of depressing or serious or whatever, but I think each one of them tries to inspire some sort of hope or some sort of positive message. You know, I mean, I could go right through the list of all the songs and do that. But
all of them in the first person too. So this must be very personal stuff to Neil.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's a valid point.
I want to know. I go blind. Take my hand. Me island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul, can you hold on a second?
Sure.
I got to deal with housekeeping. You can tell everyone that they're knocking down my door here. You
know, okay.
Where were we?
Okay, just discussing Neil's lyrics here.
Right. Personal. They are. I mean, I have a lot of insight into Neil's life. I've known him since he was 16 or 17 years old. And so I know where these songs are coming from. And they are very personal. And I think that's what Neil, he considers that important in trying to, you know, reach people and make the songs work. And the fact that he's trying to relate something on a very personal level, something that other people can identify with. You know, it's not like he's not a preaching type of songwriter or lyricist.
Just sort of reaching into his life and saying,
exactly.
Hey, has this happened to you too, sort of thing.
Yeah, oh yeah, people can identify. I mean, I hope they can. That's the idea. But you're right, they are very personal. And the thing is, like I said, it's me, just from where I come from in songwriting, which is writing part of the music. You know, when Neil brings the lyrics to the song, I mean, not that I know of all the intimate details of anyone's life other than my own, but I can tell, I have a feel from where they come from, and that sort of helps in the process of building the music around the lyrics. I mean, it's part of the creative process. It's kind of complicated and silly.
Yeah. Can you or the band cite any major influences in your work? Anybody you find has been a major factor in what you're doing?
Well, I think when we first started out as a band 5 years ago, there were many. But I think now we've sort of reached the point where we really don't draw upon influences outside so readily. Each member of the band brings their own, you know, musical background and influences to the songwriting. And we find we've become more of an influence on each other rather than drawing influences from outside the band.
We're working together so long that you sort of pick out what the other one's working on.
Yeah, it's like that. I mean, if I was to put a, for lack of a better word, I'd say it's almost a formula, you know, in a sense that we just don't, you know, we're not like picking up this record and listen to it. And how, you know, I just, no way. And I mean, we all have like, really into music, you know, growing up and that kind of stuff. And we bring a lot of that into it, but there's nothing that's like, you know, unique to our band, you know, that we draw our influences from a select group or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. You're coming out of Vancouver, and a lot of bands are doing that lately, I've noticed. We've got Slow and Skinny Puppy and Go For a Three, bands like that. Is there any reason why Vancouver is such a hotbed of music lately?
Everyone has different theories on that. I always think that, except for a few slack periods, it's always been that way. You know, when we first started getting involved with local music or, just listening to it and appreciating what was there, there were bands like, DOA and Subhumans and Young Canadians and the Point Sticks and the Dish Rags and all that kind of stuff. There was just tons and tons of bands. And then it went through a stage where a lot of those bands broke up and some went in other bands, and a lot of new and younger bands, such as ours, came on the scene. And now it's sort of built up again, and which includes the bands that you just mentioned, plus a pile of others. Why? I don't know. I think part of the reason is because Vancouver is so far away from any sort of music center that allows it to grow on its own, unhindered by any sort of business pressures, or as opposed to trying to make music in Toronto or Los Angeles. It's probably a little bit tougher to be on your own with all the business aspects of music there.
Yeah, the scene in Vancouver seems a lot stronger actually than the one in Toronto at the moment.
Probably is at the moment. But right now there's got to be 6 or 7 venues each night that are playing original music in Vancouver, and Vancouver's not nearly the same size of town as Toronto. I think that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Do you feel yourself to be a Canadian band? Is there a particular Canadian element about you?
Well, there is. Absolutely. What it is, I don't know. We were just talking last night about some of, I don't know where it comes from, but sometimes it's quite a maritime feel to what we do. I don't know if it's from Neil's days in Nova Scotia or whatever it is, but also we have a little bit of whatever it is, what Neil calls the Canadian rock band sound, whatever the hell that is. we feel definitely that we're a part of Canadian rock music.
So you feel there is a definite Canadian sound out there?
See, the thing is, music, it's such a spectrum of music coming out of Canada, it's hard to say a definite Canadian sound. I mean, on an independent or alternative or whatever you want to call it level, I would say there's definitely, a Toronto sound and a Vancouver sound, and probably to a lesser extent a Canadian sound on that level. But, when you consider this, like Loverboy and Anne Murray and, all that kind of stuff, it's hard to say that they have a Canadian sound.
And we
have a Canadian sound.
Yeah, the styles do bounce around quite a bit. There's some styles along Canada bounce around quite a bit. Like different bands doing all sorts of different things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a pretty diverse country. We're discovering that just traveling around, and meeting other bands and stuff. For instance, in August we played in Calgary with a band called Change of Heart.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Which come from Toronto, and they're really great guys. And I was quite encouraged to hear them and see them and, make the realization that they came from Toronto. It made me feel good, that there's something out there that's happening that we can relate to.
You have an interesting thing in the band with Neil and Phil sharing the vocals between them, singing at the same time and such.
Right.
How did this effect sort of work out? Did it just happen they both opened their mouths at the same time? Or?
That's a good question. A good hypothesis, too. What happened is that Neil and I started the band, about 5 years ago. We were a three-piece with another drummer. And when that drummer left, we looked upon it as being an opportunity rather than, a problem. And we decided to add another member at the same time as replacing the drummer. And so we asked Phil if he'd like to join us, and he did. And Phil brought to the band a sophistication that really wasn't there before. He has quite an involved musical background. He's a horn player, he's a trumpet player.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And he wasn't really a guitar player, but he sort of, he fooled around with guitar and stuff like that. We said, listen, this is what we have in mind. We want you to play whatever you want to be creative on. We certainly want you to play guitar and trumpet. He's playing keyboards and percussion and doing lots of background vocals. You know, we were looking for a fuller sound. Before we were a three-piece, our philosophy was less is more. You know, we always broke it down to nothing and built it back up again and that kind of stuff. But with Phil, his singing, and he's got a great voice, and it complements Neil so well that it just became a very natural thing for them to sing harmonies and for Phil to have his own parts and stuff like that.
Yeah, it works very well, for instance, when they're sharing the chorus line on I Go Blind.
Right.
One each.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little sort of round type of technique. It's kind of, it gives it lots of texture having two really distinctive voices.
Okay. Oh, well, looking forward to seeing you here. You're playing here on the 26th, I believe.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I think I'll write that down.
Okay. Yeah, that's Guelph. University of Guelph, September 26th.
Okay.
Okay, don't forget that. And could you do what's the station ID?
Certainly can.
Okay, this is CFRU.
CFRU.
In Guelph.
In Guelph. So what do you want me to say?
Tell them who you are and tell them what they're listening to.
Okay, here goes. I'm Brad Merritt of 5440, and you are listening to CFRU, University of Guelph.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Paul.
Okay, see you in a few weeks.
We'll see you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Goodbye.